come through with it. It's one of those things where he's like, baby, if you don't do this, I'm going to do this, right? And I told her if she did not become the not PTO president, I was leaving her. She's come home from that meeting. She's the PTO president. So I don't know what to do in this situation. Am I a liar or do I stay with her? I don't know. I spend 45 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes, depends on traffic, every day driving kids and pick kids up from school. Anybody want some children? Maybe that's what I need to get rid of. Whew. I need some help. So I am in the process of looking at two different things for this class, and I have not made my mind up, so I'm not going to tell you what either one of them are. And to be honest, the first question is always, do I feel passionate about it? Because if I don't feel passionate about it, I'm not going to do a good job. Second of all, I have you guys in mind, like what direction I need to go. I will say that I have fallen a little bit in love with 2 Corinthians of late, and I don't know that I've ever heard anyone teach on 2 Corinthians, so maybe it's just one of those chapters, it's one of those books that has a lot of issues in it, and I'm not really always oriented on the issues. But what we're going to do tonight, I hope to have fun with this large, ginormous crowd in here, seeing there's so many of you, means that all of you are going to get an opportunity to talk. It's hot. Anybody been outside? It's hot. What we're going to do is we're going to have a little discussion on faith. I'm not going to narrow that down because it's hopefully we're going to have a broad discussion on faith. We're going to read a few verses. We're not going to get the context of those verses because I do not have time. And then I have some penetrating questions to think about. And there's so many aspects of faith. You know, it's a very general term, and it covers lots of things. And I'm afraid that oftentimes when we use faith or belief, it is that idea of the initial belief that Jesus is the Son of God and you need to do something about your broken life. But faith is something that is alive and grows within us through the power of God. And what I want to do is, I cannot find my Bible. It'll come back hopefully for Sunday. It's okay. And I grabbed the only NIV I found, and I opened it up while I go, and I can't see the words. So here's what's going to happen. Millard, can you hear me? I'm going to need Millard to pull it up, and then I'll read it off the screen. We're going to read a few verses here to start, and we're not going to comment. Yes? Millard, were you not paying? Was David Staggs picking on you back here? That's twice on David, A, B, C, and yes. I'm going to call out some verses here to you, Millard. We're going to read them. We're not going to comment on them. I'm wanting you to think about the aspect of faith when I read these verses, and then we'll eventually, probably I'm going to read about, let me look here. We're going to read 5 verses, and then I'll ask questions, and then we'll read 5 more verses, okay? The first verse is Hebrews 11:1, of course, right? We're talking about faith. You got to go to Hebrews 11:1. Hebrews 11:1. Hebrews 11:1. I see David taking his socks off. They must be counting. Okay. 11:1, not 5. 11:1. This is my fault, my Bible. It's my fault. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. We'll talk more about that one in a little bit. Pull up Matthew 21:22. Matthew 21:22. Matthew chapter 21, verse 22. If you believe, you will receive whatever you ask for in prayer. Romans 10:17. I could do this one, but I don't know if it would be the NIV translation. Romans 10:17. Consequently, faith comes from hearing the message, and the message is heard through the word about Christ. Mark 11, 22 through 24. Mark 11, 22 through 24. Have faith in God, Jesus answered. Truly I tell you, if anyone says to this mountain, go throw yourself into the sea, and does not doubt in their heart, but believes that what they say will happen, it will be done for them. Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. Mm-hmm. 1 Corinthians 2:5. Huh. 1 Corinthians 2:5.
All right.
I had a teacher who always say it's right before 2 Corinthians. So that your faith might not rest on human wisdom, but on God's power. So again, I want this class to be experiential and participatory. That means you're going to have to participate. So I'm going to ask a question, and then you'll answer to the best of your ability. A couple of things about that. It's been a long time since I've asked questions in here. So let me tell you, usually what I tell my children about once every 3 months, there is a such thing as a dumb question. You know, teachers always say, there's no such thing as a dumb question. It's not true. I've heard so many dumb questions in my life. I mean, maybe you just hadn't been listening. I mean, there's some big yellow ones, the sun. Yep, that's right. Big yellow ones, the sun. Did you have questions about that? Yeah. Yes, no. So the second thing I want you to know is when I read a question, I write them quite intentionally. The question means what it means to you. And however you answer that question, I will lean on what you're saying. But some of these are very specific and they can't be missed. And some of them are more generic. So let's start. Does pride interfere with faith? And why? Whatever you say, yes or no. Does pride interfere with faith? Let's get a good definition of pride going. How about that before we answer that question? What is pride? Oh, just one at a time. What's pride? This one is, by the way, not nearly as simple of a definition as you think. I mean, have you ever been proud of yourself? Man, I have. Have you ever wanted someone else to be proud of you? That's pride, isn't it? Yeah. What other kind of pride is there? Haughty. What about when you're broke and you know your mama's got money, but you won't do it because you just got too much pride? What about that? Some of y'all are like, I wish my kids had a little more pride. Well, but you know what I'm saying. My brother is to the nth degree on what I just said. I mean, he took what was saying long ago to the heart. You know, if he can't get it on his own, he ain't worried about it. And what that has done is it's led him, and I've tried my best to tell him that when someone wants to do good for you, you're denying them a blessing by not letting them do good to you. I mean, I know we live in a world that is full of deceit and people have motives and ulterior motives. But if someone wants to do good for you, you just let them. At first, when I first started preaching and I'd do a funeral, I would just be adamant, like, you don't know. You know, because you don't want money for that. You've done this good thing. And that's when my mentor pulled me aside and said, listen, first of all, if the church was paying you good enough, I'd tell you just to quit. But listen to me, you're going to kill all of us out here. And those folks are just wanting to do good and they're grieving, so let them do it. Best funeral gift I've ever received. That happened last week. It was awesome. I got crocheted Illini peacocks, and y'all know how I am about birds. I love it. And it was awesome. She offered me money, and I was like, no. And she pulled that picture out. I didn't say no at all. I was like, yes, I'll take that. I love birds. I'm weird, I know. Let us pray. But you deny someone a blessing sometimes because of your own pride. You understand what I'm saying? That's, you know, not allowing others to help you is definitely one of those situations. I've told you numerous times when Charlie was born, we had insurance, and he broke records for us. Macy cost around $125,000 because of the stuff that Anna Reed went through and all of that. Charlie was over $250,000. And when we start to leave the hospital, like, your insurance didn't cover all this. You know, you need to pay us $4,000. But y'all going to have to keep him. Come back monthly, and we'll get him after a couple years, maybe, you know, whatever. And I had that elder just literally hand over $4,000. He was there when we were leaving. He was driving us home, and he gave him the money. And I just start weeping. And I tell him, I can't ever pay you back. He said, you're my favorite person to help. He said, because I know that you'll never be able to do or help me. And I don't want that. That's not why I did that. So his wife, literally, her name is Miss Patty. She calls Charlie hers. Where's my son? I paid for him. He's mine. I go, okay. But yeah, you know, sometimes that's an interesting situation. So I think pride can be many things. We cannot get away from the idea of selfishness either. I mean, you always have to talk about selfishness because selfishness is one of the biggest enemies against children of God in today's world and also in the biblical world. When we can't get over ourselves, right? I mean, I have said in so many meetings, when I was a kid, they used to have the men's business meetings, and those always went well. I will say this about men's business meetings, and I want you to hear it well. Group accountability is a wonderful thing. When you know something ugly is about to go down, my advice is get a men's meeting business, because people ain't going to come in there cussing and throwing stuff at you, right? They're going to use and taper their words the right way, and because they know they may be mad at you, and they're going to show you something, but there's a lot of other people in that room, and they think, well, that's group accountability, and a lot of times that's a good thing. But what I mean by all of that is I've said in those meetings, and I've wanted to say so many times, I'm going to take my yard and go home. You know, like little kids do when they're playing ball or whatever and they get mad. Because so many times people can't get over themselves. And that's pride. It's an absolute pride issue. So does pride interfere with faith, and why? Now, James is about to start answering these questions up here. And that's going to be a problem because he's going to answer every one. I'm going to be mad at y'all. I started easy for the love of all that is right. Does pride get in the way of faith? Yes. Okay, why? Why does it get in the way of faith?
Faith is a spiritual thing. Pride is a human thing. It's a human aspect that we have. You see a lot of churches that got themselves in trouble because people had so much pride that they didn't get to be involved in making the decision about what color the faith was. They felt like they were entitled. Pride is a personal thing. It's not faith. That's the word. But it's not a spiritual aspect.
I think that's good. Absolutely, some of the most biggest barriers to our spiritual life are human traits. I would say that's very good. What else? Anybody else got anything? Oh, yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. Boy, the story of Sarah, I mean, if y'all don't know, it looks like just a small thing that Sarah does. I mean, obviously, nobody in today's world would do that. But they're stuck at this point where God's going to produce it, so she tries to help God. And what happens in that situation, of course, is the hand servant has a baby and eventually has to run away. She's fearful for her life. But more important than that is what? What aspect of this? It happens today. Wars going on in the Middle East. And this is all down to these two descendants. And it's that one moment in history where someone tried to help God. And you think about, well, that's not good. But how many of us do that? And I think about that verse about if you have faith, you can throw mountains into the ocean. I mean, how many people in here talk about faith and then do everything they can to make sure whatever they have gone to. So I was recently speaking with the president of Columbia Academy. You know, Columbia is my favorite city around here. That was sarcasm. But I love him. James Thomas is his name. And he'll be in heaven. This is a good man. He's a good one. He has a family. I don't know. They're different than he is. He's solid, I'm telling you. And I had heard that they had built this big sports thing, and I don't know if y'all have seen it. It's ginormous. And the check bounced at the bank. The big donor went bankrupt, and they didn't have the money. And he says to me, so I saw him at Fried Hardeman. Of course, I wanted to ask him about it because did you start drinking? I mean, what happened? I mean, did you lose your job? And he's like, no. He said, here's what happened. God knew that we would lack faith to build that, and so we built it without any means possible, and so he delivered. And to be honest, it's challenged me so much. I mean, again, you have to know this guy. He takes it to this level. I'm like, well, I'm a terrible person. I need to go pray right now, you know. But I would have never thought about it that way, seen something from that perspective, that direction. But, yeah, they did something that they had faith in a check when they should have been having faith in God, you know, and God displayed for them, like, just have faith. And so they built it. And the money came through eventually. So I think that's definitely one of those things. Okay, let me go on here. I believe Elisha and Naaman is a beautiful example of pride. Y'all remember that story where he wanted to be cured, and so he comes to Elisha. And he has leprosy, and he comes to Elisha, and Elisha tells him he has to go do something 7 times, and he just leaves. Like, I thought he'd come to me. You know who I am? I'm a leader in the army, the Syrian army. I thought he'd come out here to me and called the Lord and cleansed me. So he just walked away from the power of God. Why? Pride. Maybe if he'd told him to do it one time, he'd have done it, but 7, that's just too much to get rid of leprosy. It's funny, yet true. Pride definitely gets in the way. Next. This one's a little more complicated, and seeing how you answered on that one, I'm really excited to read this one. What does the Apostle Paul mean by writing, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith? This is Romans 1:17. The righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. What does he mean by that? Now, I want you to definitely open your Bibles and read around here and try to dig up with something. Come up with something about this. This one's important. Yes, I think I can answer this one very easily. Not usually do I think that, but I believe, I don't know if you heard my definition at the beginning, but I believe faith is something that lives in us and it grows. And we make mistakes, hopefully, early on in our spiritual walk with God that we grow past in our faith. I don't know, I can't think of an example of what that is in my own life. I could, but they're very crude, so I'm not going to say those. But something that maybe you struggled with that you grew past in your faith. For me, I have been amazingly humbled in my walk with God. And I'm not saying that like I'm a humble person, but just God has drawn my attention to people in a way that I don't think I ever would have chosen. And sometimes it is a human burden to bear. Last night, my wife and I finally got to sit down. It was probably about 7 o'clock or whatever, and my phone starts blowing up, and it is problems, okay? I mean, it is just human problems, and I have to, Sloan comes in there, and they're trying to mess with me or whatever and talk to me, and I can't talk to them because I'm completely immersed in this conversation, and a long time ago, I said, I'd never do that. I'd put my phone away, but people want you to have your phone these days. So I have to walk out of that room and go back there and think and pray. And what words do I text back? You know how texts can be received differently. It depends on what words you say, you know. And so I think about that and that what people are to me. I would tell anybody that I became preacher for people. You ask me the most difficult part about my job? People. I mean, it's people. And I think that that has been one of those things where God has brought me into, not necessarily somewhere I would have come or wanted to come to, but he has brought me to. In the very beginning, I didn't ever see widows. And these are things I hope I have grown past, right? When people talked about widows as a kid and then as a young adult, and then into my 30s, I never saw a widow in my life. I never saw her. I mean, she was in church and I loved her. She made great cookies. Them some good cookies, right? She wanted to talk a whole lot, and I didn't always understand that, right? And now that I've grown in my faith, I see widows. I see widows through, you know, a life education and a growth in faith. I don't know if that helps or you see what I'm saying. So I do think if he would have been more spiritually mature, that his pride would have vanished or it would have been eaten or consumed by that. It is difficult. It is difficult to be different. It is difficult to change. But this is why faith is important, because it's not only a human thing, it's a God thing. You know, the very beginning of the book of Job is not about Job's faith. It's about God's faith in Job. And when we get to the New Testament, you know, a lot of times we translate certain things in the book of Romans if we have faith in Christ. But the passage really says it's Christ's faith that saves. And we can understand that because he was faithful to the end. And because of that, we have the opportunity to be saved. Does that make any sense? Am I getting close? You scratch your nose like I hate you. Should we hug? I agree with that.
My biggest struggle with my pride is after something or in the process of overcoming a mountain
I know that I can reach out in prayer. I know that that this congregation here loves me, but that's where my pride hits me the most is, no, you don't have to do that. You don't have to ask your best because you can do this on your own. Like the devil sitting on the shoulder, don't admit this. You can overcome it. It's stronger if you do overcome it by yourself.
Yes. That for me, I have been humiliated in my life, and I had to go to drug rehabilitation. And the first thing they told me is I had to be honest. And trust me, I have Gary tell me sometimes, tone down. Just don't tell people. Don't tell them. But I have to. I mean, because I don't want to go back to being that person. I don't know if that makes sense. But my pride is the same place it's always been. I hate mean people. Hate them. I hate mean people. Do you hear me? And I have to pray about it. And here's the problem with that. Mean people are terrible. I think everyone in here would agree. But it's how I've always responded to mean people. And I hate predictability. I hate being someone that anyone would ever. But I can tell you what Ben McAnally is. But I don't know really what most people would say. But if my kids can do it, Macy can do it. You remember the story about E.O. Kaufman? About the guy that got out and said, "You're lucky." And I lost control in that moment. I had complete control until that moment. And he turns around and tell me I'm lucky. I got out and told him he was lucky. You know, that kind of deal. And it's so immature, so just dumb in that moment. But before all that went down, as soon as he says the words, "You're lucky," my daughter starts going, "No, Daddy, no, Daddy." Because she, you know, I'm predictable. This is my pride. I'm not going to stand here and let somebody be mean to me. You know, I'm not going to handle it. I'm going to get out and we're going to walk together for a while. And I'm a preacher. Let us all pray. I know. Gary's just I'm writing notes. This is you should not say. But I'm human. And I've always, if you view me as anything other than human, it's your fault, not mine. Not mine. So that's where my pride comes in. In that moment, I just can't stand mean people. Well, there's no need in being mean. Everybody in here has got immense burden on their shoulders right now. I don't know what that burden is, but you got some burden. I don't know if it's an older member of your family that's dying and all the family's not coming together like they should and you're spending more time taking care of them than the rest of the family. That's a big one. Or, you know, whether it be, there's something, some burden that you have. So why in the round world would you be mean to people? Everybody's toting something. Sorry. But, yeah, I think that's a good point. I do think that a lot of times it's not just pride. I mean, that's with them, and I have no clue what it was. But it definitely, I mean, with the criteria, pride definitely had a part of it, but also a lack of faith, always, a lack of belief. You think about Peter. I mean, did he lack faith, you wonder? I wonder if he lacked faith. But they walk off that mountain, and the first thing they see is what? A person that couldn't be healed. And Jesus tells them, "Oh, you have little faith." And these are the ones that are going to set the world on fire. Oh, sorry, I got to go on. Thank you. I don't even know what question I read. So let's read the next question. Righteousness of God revealed from faith. Let me answer that real quick. I think that this is one of those moments where everyone in this room has a huge difficulty, and it goes back to what I think Jared is pride. Abraham, right before Sodom and Gomorrah go down, God has a conversation with himself. This is, if you've not read it, it's wonderful. And it says, talking to himself, he says, "We should inform him," and it's in this moment that we should tell him what we're going to do. And it's God talking to himself. Of course, it's, you know, these three distinct forms. In Hebrew, Elohim is the word for God, and it is plural. But yet the Jews are a monotheistic belief. They believe in one God, but the name they call God is plural. It's interesting. Now, they would never say there are three people in the Godhead, but yet they say call God Elohim, not free. Anyway, let me move forward. So it's in this moment that God does reveal his plans to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And the Bible says that he cloaks Abraham with his righteousness. And this we cannot miss as God's people. You have to understand what is taking place in that moment. When he gets to the New Testament and he turns around and he tells his disciples, "Unless your righteousness exceed that of the Pharisees." At that moment, they are morally crushed because they have no clue how they can be more righteous than the Pharisees. When it comes to righteousness and self-righteousness, any kind of righteousness you want to talk about, the Pharisees are the elite at it. I mean, when Paul is giving credentials for himself, he says, when it comes to the law, flawless. Like to punch him in the face, wouldn't you? Think about that. When it comes to the law, flawless. So in all of that, what Jesus is telling them in that moment, unless you're cloaked with my righteousness, you'll never be right. That's all of Romans 3, by the way. I've told you this before, but it says just and justified, but in the Greek it does not, because we do not have a verb form in English of the word righteous. is the only reason that we have misunderstood that. Now think about how important that is. So when we talk about Paul and his theology of justification, you have to understand that word's not even in the Bible. It's righteousfied or righteousification, which we don't have in our language. You'd sound real smart if you used them a lot. But that's what it's about. God makes you right. And that's all of Romans 3, 21 through 27 specifically. Jesus is just and the justifier. Jesus is right and the righteousifier of all those who believe. So the righteousness of God from faith to faith is that point where God cloaks us with that righteousness. And in the Bible is always talking both horizontal and vertical. And what I mean by that is our faith in God, God's faith in us, and our faith in one another as a community. And that's something I think that we don't talk about enough, is the faith that we have in the brotherhood or our family of God, not the overall, but here as a family. Next question. Paul writes about the power of salvation to everyone who believes in Romans 1:6. The power of God for salvation to everyone who believes in Romans 1:6. What is that power? I can give you another verse if you don't like that verse. The word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to those who believe, those who are being saved, it is the power of God. So that's sort of in reverse. So what's the power of God in this situation? What produces salvation for us? If Christ would not have died, would your faith have saved you? It's one of those things where we would not have written it that way, right? We would not have written it where we sacrificed someone to save the world. We would have done it a different way. But God displayed his power to us through his Son. And you think about how humbling of an experience that could be. God was, if he were filled with pride, would he offer his Son? Again, think about all of this. And when he's calling us to faith, he's given us this wonderful example. Ooh, voice crack. Wonderful example of what faith is. I'm not going to read any more verses because I don't have time. But I'm going to read this next question. I have three questions I think that I should be able, hopefully, I've got more, but we should be able to get through these three. Is believing the same thing as faith? Is believing the same thing as faith? I agree 100%. So is faith and believing the same thing? So they're different.
They are different.
They're believing together, but is they're something different. We do with our human brain, and faith is something.
I think she's about to go somewhere I love right here. Not seriously. I think sometimes the road between our head and our heart is so long. It's so far away. Yeah, we know what to do, but we don't do it.
Believing is something that we consciously decide to do, and faith comes from that believing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing. Interesting. I agree with all this. I think about the Jews. Did they believe that God was real? Did they? Yeah. Did they constantly display faith? No. So there's a difference. You can see a difference in this. And I think that this is something that we may not stress enough either. Go ahead. Well, Mount Zion, when they got to Sinai, they did hear the rumblings. You know that verse that's repeated over and over in the Old Testament, that the fear of God is the beginning of all wisdom. That's one of those things that you can run it. I call that mental bubble gum. You know, you can put that in your brain like, what does that mean? The fear of God is the beginning of all wisdom. But I think it's what Brother Ray said right here. You know, it is It is connecting that when you believe God is going to do what he's going to do, then things open up, begin to open up anew for you, and you begin to see eyes. And
don't you think that faith prompts more action than just believing?
Oh, absolutely. And he stole my next question. Yeah. No, I agree.
Act.
Yes. And see, this is why when we get to James, James doesn't get near the credit he deserves, because he is unlike Paul. Paul will spend, as I've told you, he spends 12 chapters in Romans to make one point. And But James is not like that. James is not developing arguments. He has hit you in the face. Here it is. Eat it and swallow it. This is the way it's going to be. And one of the things he gets to that we avoid, and some people avoid in the denominational world because they don't like it, don't like its wording, but it's faith without works is dead. Now, I would say that I was leading up to that question, and what I was wanting you to see is it's not works lead to faith. It is not works that lead to faith. It is faith that leads to works. And that is something I think we've sometimes misrepresented. We would never put that on a chart or anything, but we've talked about that a lot. And I think even, brace yourself, sometimes we've talked about baptism as if it were a work. And I've told you this. I've never met a member of the Churches of Christ that would say they believed in once saved, always saved. I've never met one. I've met some with some very unique, weird, crazy, wrong views. I mean, I've met all of that. But I've never met someone who said, I believe in once saved, always saved. But sometimes the way we talk about baptism, you know, if someone has a kid who's grown up in the church and they're off on their own, they're not coming to church, he's not baptized. Well, we can do that right now. I don't know if it's going to help any. Just baptize him. Because why? All of this other stuff has to come. And so you talk about baptism that way, then you're making it a work. Like if you do this for God, you're saved. And if you talk about it in the way of, you get that. So yeah, anything else about that? I gotta stay better focused. Yes, I agree with that. And this is where I fail sometimes as a preacher. I think personally, I want to feed the audience when I preach. I want to challenge you, and I don't always talk about the elementary stuff as much as I should. And so I really, Anna-Reed and I has really get me focused at some point during the year. Like Ben, you gotta do some elementary principles. But I believe my focus has truly been feeding the congregation of people, because the biggest weapon that the Lord has in this world is us. And if we could all develop a faith that was more rich just by 10% than we had the previous year, we could do things. And we struggle within our own community. You know, I have no time to worry about people that are outside of here. We struggle right here, with this aspect of faith. And I believe it's definitely one of those things. And that's why this is something, Paul, I love. You know, everywhere but Romans 5, Paul always talks about faith as a movement forward. One thing that I do, forgetting those things that are behind, I press on to the high calling. It's always a movement forward, but only in Romans 5 does he stop that movement. And he says he stands in the grace of God. And I know what that means. I think in my heart, I know exactly what that means. Every one of us in this room in our walk, say you've been 10 years spiritually growing, just strong as you can be, and then this moment comes and you drop the ball. You eat a whole bucket of ice cream in one set, that kind of thing. And in that moment, as God's child, you have options. As God's child, you have options. If you're not his child, you don't have any options. But in that moment, as God's child, you have options. You can walk away. You can jump out of his hand and leave. You can lie about it, try your best to stay in the hand, but your faith begins to die. Or you can just, please forgive my, you could be naked before God. And if you're naked before God, say, God, I failed. Then you continue to walk in the light, so we have options in that moment. And that's something I hope that we all realize, that we are going to fail. We are going to fail. I think my mom and dad fail a whole lot less. My dad thinks some things that are funny. I wish you wouldn't tell my children. No, to that. They're going to go to school and say that, but the preacher's kids cussing in school. And I'm like, no. But other than that, I think that, they sin a whole lot less than they did, 30 years ago. In their movement, and they consider other people, and that's very difficult for my mother. I've talked about her many times. She don't want folks coming to her house. So if you're ever in Iuka, don't go see my mom. It'll freak her out. Somebody's at our house. It's crazy. So I think faith is something where we lack. And I do believe that we have a lot of belief. I mean, if we went over here to Lawrence County High School and asked them how many believe that Jesus Christ is real and the Son of God, I would say the majority of them would say, yes, I believe that. But the faith aspect, like you're talking about, it's different. It's different. Let me move on. Okay. What does the Hebrew author mean by writing, faith is assurance of what is hoped for, and it is the conviction, I think that's the ESV version, the conviction of things not seen. Whoo, this is a lesson right here in its own. I'm telling you, I could preach four sermons in a Church of Christ environment right now with this. This is very important, very, very important. When you get to the end of the reality, when you get to the end of what is seen, what's after that? Faith. That's what faith is. Like I got my mass text from Rodney last week talking about coming to Apologetic Express meal they're having down there. I'll never go to that. I'm not mad at Apologetic Express. They can go do their thing, live the dream. But I don't believe that we'll ever get up and be able to formulate a doctrine or a chart or anything that will prove that there is a God. You want to know why? Because when you get to the end of the known and the unseen, what do you have to have? Faith. And if you know it and if you see it, then it's not faith. Now, I'm not saying that it's not this idea of seeing the manifestation of God in this world. We see that. And, you know, we call that glory. And we see the manifestation of God. But yet we all still have that seed of doubt that resides within us that we have to constantly eat with our faith. And things that we don't see. And I've said this many times, but science, the doctrine of science, or it was not academic version of science, falls between two known points. Science does not fall outside into the unknown. I want you to hear that clear. Science is things that you all learned. You can taste, touch, see, and do all those things with. If you can't do those things to it, you can't do science with it. Now, what they do is they take science and they make educated guesses. They would call it extrapolation, another fun word. But what they do is they take educated guesses, like carbon dating. They see how, you know, much carbon's in all of these animals. They know how long they have been dead and, you know, the rate of carbon that's found in the bones. And so they take that and they multiply that into the, I don't really know when this animal died, but it has this much carbon. You see what I'm saying? But that's not science. Science is what was known. Now, the animal that they knew when it died and they've measured the carbon, that's science. And then they use that. And so that's what we have. We have belief, and we use that belief to produce faith. And then God works on our faith. God makes us faithful. God covers us with his righteousness. And in all of that, we have our own personal righteousness that we have to work on. I gotta stop, don't I? Thank y'all. Y'all did much better than I thought you'd do, and I mean that. I mean, y'all talked tonight at least. I